and you're listening to Radioactive Magazine. My guest tonight is Leland Cox. He is the project director for Kansas Legal Services, and he is essentially the managing attorney for the Kansas City area office on the Kansas side. Welcome, Leland.
Thank you, Craig.
And, of course, we're going to be talking about the services that Kansas Legal Services provide. Let's start, if you can tell us what services are provided by your office.
Certainly. Kansas Legal Services is a private, not-for-profit law firm. A lot of people think that the terms not-for-profit and attorneys are sort of an oxymoron, like military intelligence or something. But we really are a not-for-profit law firm, and we are what most people think of as legal aid. Basically, back in the early to mid-60s, there were three legal aid societies, one in Topeka, one in Kansas City, one in Wichita, and in about 1977, they merged to form Kansas Legal Services, and we do cover the entire state of Kansas. Basically, we're in business to assist low-income folks or elderly folks who maybe cannot afford what a private attorney might normally charge. And we try to assist them in areas that might otherwise go unserved if we weren't there doing what we do.
And if somebody is in need of legal assistance and they can't afford an attorney, so they would contact your office.
Correct.
What's the process for them to get started?
There's a number of ways they can access our services. We have a toll-free number that is 1-800-723-6953. They can call that number anytime between 7:30 in the morning and 5:30 in the afternoon, Monday through Friday, and we'll ask them some questions about their income and assets, because for the most part, they do have to be low income, and they can't have a whole lot of property or assets. They can also go on to online to our website, kansaslegalservices.org, and we have an online application that they can go through if they have access to a computer and are computer literate and want to access our services that way. Or they can really walk into any of our offices. We have 11 locations across the state of Kansas, and they could walk in and do an application in person if they choose to.
And what type of cases do you handle for them?
Well, almost anything of a civil nature. We don't do criminal defense. We don't do the big fee-for-service type cases like a personal injury or a work comp case. So what we do focus on are things like we do a lot of domestic violence assistance, helping people obtain protective orders, protection from abuse or protection from stalking. We do one project that we just started this year, actually 2015 was our first year. We have a low-income payer tax clinic that operates out of our Kansas City office. But again, we do cover the entire state of Kansas. The IRS actually approached us about a little over a year ago, and they were wanting to establish a low-income taxpayer clinic in the state of Kansas. There had been only one very small office down in Wichita that closed up, and so they were looking for somebody in Kansas to take that on. Lisa Garza is our lead attorney on that project here. If someone, for that project, if they're anywhere under 250% of the federal poverty guidelines, and in general, if their amount in controversy with the IRS for any one tax year is less than $50,000, they can call us, and at no cost to them, we will attempt to assist them in getting their controversy with the IRS worked out. That may entail getting them into currently non-collectible status. It may entail working out a payment plan. There's a number of different ways we may be able to assist them. We also do a lot of work for elderly folks. Anybody 60 years of age or older can call us. We get some grant money through the area agencies on aging that serve all of the counties in our area. And if they are needing a simple will or a health care power of attorney, or perhaps a transfer on death deed or something of that nature. We do a lot of document preps for senior citizens. Again, that's at no cost for the most part. We do quite a bit of public benefits work, helping people with either state welfare programs or Social Security disability programs. We do a lot of work in the domestic area. As I said, one project that we just started about a year and a half, coming up on 2 years ago, in Johnson County, in conjunction with one of the fine judges in Johnson County, Judge Kevin O'Grady. We help staff the Johnson County Help Desk, which is designed to help people who are needing assistance completing pro se paperwork. They need to represent themselves in a divorce, for example, because they can't afford an attorney, but they do need some assistance making sure they have all the proper paperwork and get it filled out properly. And so we have one of our attorneys that staffs that desk in the basement of the Johnson County Courthouse on Tuesdays and Fridays, and we also get some help from some private attorneys sometimes that help staff that desk, and in conjunction with the clerks of the Johnson County Domestic Department, we try to assist those people who are doing their pro se paperwork. We also do a fair amount of just Chapter 7, very simple consumer Chapter 7 bankruptcy work. Sometimes that is at a reduced fee because we don't have any real funding that pays us to do that. But we might charge somebody $700 or $800 as an attorney fee for that bankruptcy, where a private attorney might charge $1,500 or up. So we do quite a bit of family law, guardians and conservatorships, especially for grandparents or aunts, uncles, older siblings that are raising children. We do some adoptions. We have a project with Children's Mercy Hospital where we try to help children that have complex medical needs, where sometimes an attorney can help further their medical needs. For just one basic example might be a child who has severe asthma, but their family is living in very substandard housing where there may be mold or other contaminants that are exacerbating the asthma. An attorney might be able to help them get out of that lease or force the landlord to remedy some of those problems so that the child and the family as a whole can live in better health standards.
When you're representing somebody on divorce side, is it always the plaintiff, the filer, or do you do both sides?
We can do both. As a general rule, we try to focus on situations where there has been violence, and especially if there's violence and children. And probably by the very nature of that, we tend to represent more females, perhaps, than males. But we sometimes, if the circumstances are right, we may represent the males as well. And it doesn't really matter if they need to be the person filing, we may initiate the case. But if the other party has already filed, we can come in and help defend a case as well.
And when you're doing this in terms of the attorney fees, and they don't pay attorney fees, but what about how do you handle expenses? Are they responsible for paying their own expenses, or do you have grants that cover that?
Generally, we tell our clients that if there is a court cost, filing fee, out-of-pocket expenses and things of that nature, that they're responsible for that. But occasionally, we have clients that just can't even afford that. We do try to operate, if we're filing a case, we try to use poverty affidavits whenever we can and whenever the courts will allow us to. But if there is a court cost or perhaps a publication fee, that can't be avoided, we do have a little bit of funding available in our litigation fund, and sometimes we will cover that for the client if they just don't have it.
Do you have a low-cost option if there's like a home study or ordered or guardian ad litem appointed in the case?
We do have, quite often we have private attorneys that will agree to help us on cases like that. For example, if we're doing a guardianship for someone who is a grandparent, perhaps, who's raising a child, there has to be a guardian ad litem appointed to that child to make sure that the that our client is an appropriate person to become guardian of that child. And we do have a list, kind of a short list, of attorneys who will agree to help us out, usually at no cost or sometimes at a reduced rate, so that we can save our clients some money on the GAL fees as well.
All right. And what are the residency requirements to get help?
Well, generally, they either have to be a Kansas resident or occasionally if they're living in another state, but the legal matter is here in Kansas where we're operating. And then, as a general rule, they need to be low income. For some of our programs, that means under 125% of federal poverty guidelines. So it depends on their family size and so forth. For some of the other programs, it may go up to 150. As I said, on a low-income tax clinic, it can go clear up to 250. So it kind of varies depending on what their needs are and which program we're getting the funding from.
And is that are the standards essentially the same for legal services in every state, or do they vary?
I think there is quite a bit of variance. Here in Kansas, we have funding from really a host of different sources. Our biggest single funding source is Legal Service Corporation, which is kind of the federal umbrella to spread federal dollars among all the programs across the country based on the census and how many low-income people are in each state or each service area. But we also get a lot of funding from many other sources. We're a United Way agency, so in our office in Kansas City, we get help from both the Wyandotte County United Way as well as the Greater Kansas City United Way programs. And we have grants with a lot of various government agencies. We get some funding assistance from the Victims of Crime Act, from the Violence Against Women's Act, the Department of Justice, a host of other government sources. And sometimes we have contracts to do some of the work. For example, we have a contract with the state of Kansas that allows us to assist children who are in foster care in getting plugged into any federal disability benefits, SSI, Supplemental Security Income, and things of that nature. So we do have a lot of different funding sources. Some of the legal service organizations around the country probably don't have near as many. Some may operate strictly just on legal service corporation money. So it really will vary, I think, from one legal service agency to another.
Okay. And you mentioned the tax clinic before. Do you get a grant from IRS to do
that? We do.
We
actually get some grant assistance from the IRS, and we work hand-in-hand with the Taxpayer Advocate Service. And like I say, that's been a fairly new project. We're still learning a lot about tax law. One of the hats that I wear is the clinic director for that clinic as well. But we've had some good successes already this year. Just one kind of, I call them warm and fuzzy stories. We had a lady who had, because of her disability, and she is drawing disability benefits, had to go through a bankruptcy, but her student loans, as many attorneys will tell you, are typically not discharged in a bankruptcy. So she applied to have those student loans waived on account of her disability. And that waiver was granted, but she still received a 1099-C for the cancellation of that debt, which resulted, she just took the 1099-C to her tax preparer, and they filed their taxes in a normal fashion, and she owed the IRS about something in excess of $40,000. Which she didn't have. She's on SSI or SSDI, I don't remember now. But because she had just filed bankruptcy, it was readily apparent to us that she would probably qualify under the special insolvency rules. So we had her do an amended return, claim the insolvency rules, and her IRS obligation changed from over $40,000 to just over $500, which she was able to set up a payment plan and pay. So she was very happy, very relieved, and that was one case that was kind of a quick and easy fix. Most of these IRS cases take a lot longer and are a lot more involved, but that one was kind of a nice win in a short fashion.
So what are the requirements for somebody to claim the insolvency status?
Well, if it's kind of a I couldn't give you the specific definition of insolvent, but somebody who has just filed a bankruptcy or is preparing to file a bankruptcy will almost always meet that requirement. And she had been in that situation. If somebody, you know, her situation was such that she was on a very fixed, very low income, had very little to no money in the bank, I think she might have owned her home, which is exempt, and a car, you know, and the typical household furnishings, but she did not have, you know, thousands of dollars in the bank or CDs or investments or anything like that. What she owned was probably all exempt, and so she met those insolvency rules, and it's not really that difficult for a lot of people if they're in that situation where they've either just going into or just coming out of a bankruptcy, they would probably meet it.
So they got rid of the... I know in the past, or at least I thought maybe my belief was erroneous, but I thought that you could never discharge taxes in a bankruptcy.
That's generally correct. What the bankruptcy did not get rid of her tax obligations, but because she was insolvent, the tax that was due on that cancellation of debt simply did not apply in her instance. And so the amended tax return actually relieved her of that obligation because the IRS accepted the amended return and agreed with it that she was insolvent at the time.
So it's internal relief, essentially, that IRS grants, huh?
Pretty much. In this instance, it was.
Okay. In terms of child custody, do you take those cases, too?
We do sometimes. Again, we tend to focus on the instances where there has been abuse. And we have had some kind of nasty custody fights. One of our attorneys here just this year finished up a case where one of the parents, actually both parents, were from a foreign country. One of the parents had taken only one of the two children and gone back to their native country. And our client had not seen that child for about, I want to say, 4 or 5 years. But we were able to get some warrants out, and when the grandparents of this child tried to bring him back into the country, they were stopped at the airport, and we were able to finally get that child reunited with his brother and mother, and now have the dad under a fairly hefty situation where he has to pay a bond just for visitation purposes, and of course the child's passport is in our client's hands, so hopefully that can't ever be repeated. And that wasn't really a case where violence was the problem as much as it was simply one parent taking a child and running back to another country and just being out of the jurisdiction here. So
does your office also handle any immigration cases or have a panel of attorneys that you refer people to?
We cannot handle one of the LSC requirements is the prohibition against doing any outright immigration. There are a few exceptions to that. For example, if as a general rule, somebody needs to be a U.S. citizen to be our client. But if they are here legally, there are certain types of cases that we can still assist them with. Domestic violence is usually the key factor there. If they're a victim of domestic violence, we can still help them with things like obtaining a protective order. But for most purposes, if they're not a U.S. citizen, we can't assist.
Okay. And when you are helping people, you mentioned some situations where you provide some pro se assistance. When you're doing that, what do you do to limit your liability so that they can't come back if they do something wrong and say, well, you gave me the form?
Well, we certainly do have malpractice insurance in place, and that would even cover our attorneys when they're giving out advice to a pro se litigant. So at the help desk there in Johnson County, for example, if we help somebody put together the petition and the schedules that they need for the pleadings that they need to do a divorce, And I guess if we were to make some sort of error and damage that client, and they could prove malpractice, then we've got very good malpractice insurance coverage. We've never had to test that very far as I know, but there may be a first time for everything.
Okay. And as far as the other question was voting situation, where especially elderly people, if you're having a problem, or if they're having a problem with registration, et cetera, and there's if they're trying to block them from registering and there's legal issue, do you help them?
Well, we probably could. Like I say, pretty much any type of a civil matter, if they otherwise qualify because of income or assets or because they're over 60, we may very well be able to help them with that, yeah. It's not a very common thing, but it's not to say that we couldn't.
All right. And we have our next guest on the line. We're going to see if he's still on the line, and if not, we'll continue with Leland. Otherwise, our next guest will be Joe Spies from the Sierra Club. Joe, are you there? Okay. I think we lost. okay, I apologize for that. We have a new system we just installed, and so we need to find that out. Our engineer has not used the new system yet, so we'll stay with Leland for a few more minutes unless we get Joe back on the line. Now, you said you don't do criminal cases. Do you do, like, simple traffic stuff or anything?
We can do just some very low-level traffic. We can advise, for example, on a first-time DUI, something like that. But we generally do not go to court and actually represent people on traffic or criminal matters of that sort.
All right. And if somebody is coming to your office, either as a petitioner in a divorce or as a respondent, especially if they're a petitioner and they want to file a divorce, what would you suggest to the parties? What are some of the key things that they should do to protect their rights pending the divorce?
Well, one of the things that they can do to help us get the case moving quickly is to have particularly if they're already separated from the party that they're divorcing, we need to have a good address. We need to have, you know, the basic information, their full name, their social, and things of that nature. Another thing that's really important is to have a good, complete list of any property or assets that need to be divided in the divorce, and then, of course, any information having to do with any children.
So. All right, and let me just check. Joe, are you on the line now? Okay. All right. We will have Joe on in a couple of weeks or sometime later this month in December then. All right. In terms of the protection from abuse, all right. As far as the protection from abuse cases, what should people do to protect themselves in that situation, especially respondents?
Well, I think the main thing they can do is if they get served with a petition seeking a protection from abuse order. Number one, they should not ignore it. They should contact an attorney, file a response. Many times these things can be worked out with a minimum of hassle. Ultimately, for some people, particularly if they're police officers or somebody who security guards who need to carry a gun as part of their work, having a PFA filed against them can be somewhat devastating, can interfere a great deal with their employment. If they're in the Army, military, or something like that, it can certainly play a serious role. So if they will respond and deal with it in a responsible fashion, there may be a good chance to work something out to everybody's satisfaction and still fall a little bit short of the ultimate sanction that that type of a order can provide.
And if there is a protection from order of abuse issued, my understanding when I had a case in Johnson County is that there is now a national registry that their name goes on. And I think there's also a situation where it affects if they are operating daycare or working in a nursing home, they can't get those jobs either.
You're correct. There's a number of situations where it may interfere greatly with their employability, and even their if they're running a daycare or something like that, they may be out of business if that stays in place.
All right. Okay. I want to go back in terms of protecting themselves, the property, protecting your property. And especially oftentimes somebody gets a temporary restraining order pending the divorce. And so they can't get in to get their property, and that leaves them vulnerable for the other party to perhaps do something with the property of the other. So how do they protect themselves from that situation?
Well, generally, if there is a temporary orders issued and one party is awarded possession of the house or the apartment that they're in, they tend to make provisions for the other party to make arrangements to get in and get what they need, clothing and that sort of stuff. Generally, in a divorce situation, the bigger division of property, where they may be divvying up beds and couches and televisions and things of that nature may wait till later. But generally, if they will obtain competent counsel and go through the right steps, it should not be hard to make arrangements, perhaps with police standing by if need be. But generally, if it's a violent situation in particular, we'll have maybe a neutral third party, a parent or a friend that both parties can agree on, along with the standby of the law enforcement if need be, and make arrangements for that other party to get in and get the stuff that they need on a temporary basis.
All right. And I know we both attended a COE today on the new child support guidelines, so I won't get into that right now.
Oh, good.
But those take effect January 1st, and so I'd like to have you back sometime in the early spring after they take effect and talk about child support.
Okay.
And maybe between the two of us we can figure out what the new guidelines really are.
Sounds like it is.
All right. So you've been listening to this, Craig Lubon. You've been listening to Radioactive Magazine. Let me have you give us your website again and the phone number.
Okay, the intake phone number that anyone can call is a toll-free number. It's 1-800-723-6953. And again, the hours that they can call that number are 7:30 to 5:30 Monday through Friday, 7:30 in the morning to 5:30 in the afternoon. Our website is just kansaslegalservices.org, and make sure you find the right one that talks about the not-for-profit law firm. There are some other very similar-sounding websites where that may advertise free attorneys or this or that, but you want to be sure you get plugged into ours. There, you can go online at that website and fill out an application if you want as well.
And is it safe to assume that if somebody qualifies for food stamps or Medicaid and those programs that they would generally qualify for the legal aid from your office. Huh?
Yes, that's absolutely correct.
All right. Okay. Thank you for joining us. This has been Radioactive Magazine. My guest is Leland Cox, who is the project director at Kansas Legal Services. And essentially what that means is he's the managing attorney for the Kansas City area office. And tune in next week for Radioactive Magazine.